Chapter 2. Earth, Greater Chicago Industrial Zone, August 10, 2524. When Avery woke, he was already home. Chicago, the one-time heart of the American Midwest, was now an urban sprawl that covered the former states of Illinois, Wisconsin, and Indiana. The territory wasn't part of the United States, not in any formal sense. Some people who lived in the zone still considered themselves American, but like everyone else on the planet, they were citizens of the United Nations, a sea change in governance that was inevitable once humanity began to colonize other worlds. First Mars, then the Jovian moons, and then planets in other systems. Checking his comm pad on the military shuttle from orbit to the Great Lakes spaceport, Avery confirmed he was on a 2-week pass, that he'd be able to enjoy his first extended break from Operation Trebuchet. There was a note on the pass from Avery's CO detailing the injuries sustained by the Marines on his last mission. All of Avery's Alpha Squad had survived with minor injuries, but Bravo Squad hadn't been so lucky. 3 Marines were killed in action, and Staff Sergeant Byrne was hanging by a thread in a UNSC hospital ship. The note said nothing about civilian casualties, but Avery remembered the force of the hauler's blast, and he doubted any had survived. He tried not to think, let his mind go blank, as he boarded a maglev passenger train from the spaceport to the zone. Only later, when Avery stepped out onto the elevated platform of the Cottage Grove terminal, did the hot and humid air of a late Chicago summer snap his senses back into focus. As the sun dove to a fiery finish, he enjoyed what little breeze was coming off Lake Michigan, lukewarm gusts that hammered up the east-west blocks of tumble-down gray stone apartments, scattering the autumn leaves of the sidewalk maples. Arms laden with duffel bags and wearing his navy blue dress pants, collared shirt, and cap, Avery was drenched with sweat by the time he reached the Seropian, a center for active retirement, or so its hospitality computer told him, as he stepped into the tower's stifling lobby. Avery's Aunt Marcille had moved to the complex a few years after he joined the Marines, vacating the same walk-up apartment on Blackstone Avenue they'd shared since Avery was a boy. His aunt's health was failing, and she'd needed the extra care. And more to the point, she was lonely without him. As Avery waited for an elevator that would take him up to the 37th floor, he stared into a recreation room filled with many of the Seropian's bald and silver-haired residents. Most were clustered around a video display tuned to one of the public comm's all-news channels. There was a report of fresh INI attacks in Epsilon Eridanus, a series of bombings that had killed thousands of civilians. As usual, the broadcast featured a UNSC spokesman who flatly denied the military's campaign was faltering. But Avery knew the facts. The insurrection had already claimed more than 1 million lives. The INI attacks were becoming more effective, and the UNSC reprisals more heavy-handed. It was an ugly civil war that wasn't getting any prettier. One of the residents in the rec room, a black man with a deeply lined face and a crown of wiry gray hair, spotted Avery and frowned. He whispered something to a large white woman in a voluminous house dress, overflowing a wheelchair by his side. Soon all the residents that weren't hard of hearing or too dim-sighted to see Avery's uniform were nodding and clucking, some with respect, others with scorn. Avery had almost changed into his civilian clothes on the shuttle to avoid just this sort of uncomfortable reaction, but in the end he decided to stick with his dress blues for his aunt's sake. She'd waited a long time to see her nephew come home, all spit and polish. The elevator was even warmer than the lobby, but inside his aunt's apartment, the air was so frigid, Avery could see his breath.
"Auntie,"
he called, dropping his duffels on the well-worn blue carpet of her living room. The bottles of fine bourbon he'd bought at the spaceport duty-free clinked together between his neatly folded fatigues. He didn't know if his aunt's doctors were letting her drink, but he did know how much she used to enjoy an occasional mint julep.
"Where are you?"
But there was no reply. The flower-patterned walls of the living room were covered with picture frames. Some were very old, faded prints of long-dead relatives his aunt used to talk about as if she'd known them personally. Most of the frames held hollow stills, three-dimensional pictures from his aunt's lifetime. He saw his favorite, the one of his teenage aunt standing on the shore of Lake Michigan in a honeybee-striped bathing suit and wide straw hat. She was pouting at the camera and its cameraman, Avery's uncle, who had passed away before he was born. But there was something wrong with the stills. They seemed oddly out of focus. And as Avery stepped down the narrow hallway to his aunt's bedroom and ran his fingers across the frame's sheets of glass, he realized they were covered in a thin layer of ice.